Hello and welcome to Hysteria. I'm Erin Ryan.
And I'm Alyssa Mastromonaco.
Alyssa, do you want to know the newest addition to our elaborate Halloween display this year?
Oh, please tell me.
A 9-foot-tall tree called a murderous maple that we got at Home Depot, and it has a light-up face, and it rules.
That is amazing. I keep meaning to send you pictures when I am back upstate. Erin, the local fence company made skeletons fixing a fence outside, and I know I need to send you a picture. And then further down the road, there is like a 20-foot skeleton family that someone has erected in their front yard.
Oh, God bless that skeleton family.
God bless having lots of room.
Right, we've got a great show today. We break down the VP debate that happened on Tuesday night and discuss the slipperiness of J.D. Vance and the authenticity of Tim Walz. He would be such a great vice president, and we're really proud of how he did. We also got to talk about the judge in Georgia overturning an abortion ban with a really fire ruling. Am I allowed to say fire ruling? Am I young enough? Am I too old? Is that okay? What are we saying? What are the kids saying nowadays? We also have some interviews with some down ballot candidates you're going to want to get to know, and a fun little romp through Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who stress ordered I'm just seeing this. Whoever wrote this line for me, thank you. You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast for people who stress ordered Panda Express before the VP debate. That was me. I did that.
That tracks.
I did that. It was good. The Panda Express near me is like a good version.
Panda Express is delicious.
It's not Chinese food. It is specifically Panda Express.
Panda Express.
It's its own thing. So let's talk a little bit about the VP debate last night, Alyssa. What are your thoughts on it? Now we're 12 hours after the debate. People will be listening to this a good, you know, day and a half after the debate is done. Now that you've been able to sit with it for a little bit, what are your takeaways from the debate?
I thought the debate was good for America. I actually felt like the sort of civil tone really did J.D. Vance dirty because we could see what he was saying. And I think that for people who were looking for actual information or who were undecided, I think that it helped. I think it helped. I think we could really hear what they both stood for and what they were trying to explain. And I will say I deeply enjoyed watching J.D. Vance trying to defend some of Trump's more batshit stuff. And if we had had a drinking game for how many times he would shriek open borders, I think that we wouldn't have been able to do the podcast today. But in general, I enjoyed it.
It's interesting. I'm glad I'm talking to you about this because I had a totally different take. I was uncomfortable watching it because J.D. Vance is such a wriggly little twerp. And I know his type. I know his type. The most exhausting person in your poli-sci class who's raising his hand to argue with a professor 2 minutes before you're supposed to be able to leave. That is his entire vibe. He does have, as pundits were saying, like, he's got finesse. He seemed more comfortable up there. He seemed more smooth up there. But, of course, pundits whose job it is to sort of whiz-bang wow people by saying a whole lot of nothing would be impressed by somebody who's adept at saying a lot of nothing. And this morning I woke up and I was like, you know what? J.D. Vance didn't say anything. He has no record. He has no record to defend. He has no accomplishments as a member of the Senate, which he's been a member of for less than 2 years. He has no accomplishments and no record. Tim Walz did get to speak about his record, his very successful record as a governor of a state that is a very successful state. He was able to talk about getting paid family leave going. He was able to talk about the free school meals program that got passed in the state of Minnesota. He was able to talk about the way his heart changed on gun violence and gun control. And I think that pundits are going to be impressed by somebody who seems comfortable and smooth, but voters are going to be impressed by somebody who has actual accomplishments. And Tim Walz has actual accomplishments. I also found some of the coverage of I was listening to NPR this morning, and the take on J.D. Vance was like, oh, he was able to say if Kamala Harris's ideas are so good, then why hasn't she done them? I think that is such a—
What?
That is such a—
So dumb.
There are three branches of government, my dude. Like, that is such a stupid take. And I think that that point, if Kamala really wanted to get them done, she would have gotten them done. How? Explain how.
How? This was the downside of the— Of the civility, right? Which was that it did let J.D. Vance kind of put lipstick on a pig. Like, whereas Trump just comes off as unhinged. I do worry that for people who were not intently listening to what he said, that he made completely unhinged policies sound civil. Yeah. You know, so I would say for me personally watching it, I appreciated being able to hear him say what he said. But I think fundamentally, Tim Walz, of all the candidates on the ballot, Trump, Vance, Kamala Harris, and Tim Walz, he walked in with the highest favorability rating. And I do not think that changed when he walked out of the debate.
Yeah.
You know, I think that he did a great job. And I think especially, like, everyone's nervous the first couple of minutes, but I think J.D. Vance fell apart at the end, like, when they were asking him about January 6th, and he's like, let's talk about the future. And it's like, okay, but you don't get to do that mm-hmm. because everything you've said is about the past.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you've been saying, well, Trump did this, and we haven't finished this. Well, dude, my dude, as you would say, that's the past.
Right.
And so you don't get to say, but, oh— January 6th, which, by the way, is the most recent past of the Trump administration.
Yeah.
And that's the part we're going to ignore entirely.
Yeah. And I think that that sort of was his mask off moment, was J.D. Yeah. Vance's mask off moment, especially when he was trying to wriggle. I think at that point was like, oh, yeah, this is a wriggly motherfucker. And I think every single person watching has dealt with somebody trying to get out of trouble by being like, well, what we really need to be talking about is this. And it's like, no.
Right.
You were asked specifically about this. Answer that question, and then we can move on to the next topic. Like, he tried to pivot from a lack of peaceful transfer of power and a lie that propelled an insurrection at the Capitol to censorship. He was worried about that was so
when they're banning books left and right.
But also, like, even if the Democrats were banning books, like, I'm sorry, right. They're not, like, they're both very bad. But if the Democrats were the ones physically taking books out of people's hands, it would be less bad than inciting an insurrection in order to interrupt the peaceful transfer of power. And the fact that he tried to draw that false equivalency was such a misstep that it made me think of his entire debate performance in a different light. Like, looking back on it, I'm like, oh, he was just doing that constantly, but just less dramatically. And that's the style of, like, a high school debate champion who can win just by talking a lot and talking really fast.
Which is what he did.
But I think that he didn't make a case for why the Trump ticket has solutions. What he was able to do was identify problems that were really anodyne. Like, oh, yeah, gun violence, it's a problem. And then he would identify an anodyne problem and then pivot to an insane take on the source of the problem. Like, oh, yeah, we agree.
Hardening doors.
Right. Guns are a problem. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Nodding along. I agree with you there, JD. And it's, we need better doors. What? Wait a minute. What? You said doors? We need better doors? Okay. Did a door factory just give you a big donation? Like, why is that the solution? Or, like, housing is unaffordable. Yeah, absolutely, JD. I totally
federal
agree.
Lands.
Well, but, like, what federal lands are we going to build plumbing hookups on, dude? Have you ever been to Escalante? That shit is in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Especially because they already want to drill for more fuel on federal lands.
It's
where,
like,
are all the federal lands?
I mean— But there are a lot of federal lands are simply just, like, not arable. Like, they're not.
Right.
They're the location of really delicate ecosystems that should not be bulldozed and built up.
Right.
Or, like, housing unaffordable. Yes, JD, I totally agree. It's because undocumented people are buying the houses. What? Or taking the houses or being given the houses by some untold mechanism. What are you talking about, my dude? I don't. But he did that in a way that was relatively undetectable until the very end, where it's like, oh, you're just okay. That's what you've been doing all along.
And also, I feel like, you know, J.D. Vance, what most Americans have seen is that and pundits for that matter, is that J.D. Vance is absolutely catastrophically bad on the stump. And so while people kept saying, well, Tim Walz is like lowering his expectations, J.D. Vance had been lowering his expectations for months, mm-hmm. like ever since Trump picked him. So the fact that he coherently spit out a lot of words, also you have to be like to the pundits who are like, he won. Did he? Because he said sentences.
No, I mean, and that's the game that he's playing. He is impressive to pundits because he has a skill set that pundits find impressive. But do voters find it impressive? And I don't buy that voters find it impressive that a person can kind of slither around the answer to direct questions. I also think, you know, let's talk a little bit about climate. There were some questions about Hurricane Helene, which the devastation is just like unfathomable. We will not know the extent of it for days, weeks, months. And I don't know. It's horrible. It would not have occurred had there not been conditions that encourage extreme weather events. And extreme weather mm-hmm. events are more likely to occur because of climate change. I think that Vance got let off the hook a little bit in talking about, like, of course.
Simply by saying he likes clean air and water.
Yeah. Like,
but also they don't.
He likes it for himself because he's a millionaire.
Right.
And he's a millionaire who's always going to be able, he thinks, always going to be able to buy a house in a place with clean air and water. The people right. who are stuck with the poison water and the runoff are actually like his Appalachian brethren who are forced right. to live in cities where their water is polluted, where the air is polluted, where people are experiencing higher rates of cancer, birth defects, issues with miscarriage and stillbirth because right. of pollution. J.D. Vance is never, ever, he thinks, going to have to worry about personally living in a place that is polluted.
Right.
But the thing that Hurricane Helene shows us is that there are no climate, there's no climate havens. There's no place
right.
to go where you're going to be protected from this. And I think that Vance is living under a delusion. And we see this time and time again with him, but people don't really hit him on it. He isn't capable of caring for people who he cannot directly, personally relate to. Like, he doesn't
right.
care. And that's pretty obvious in his answer.
The other thing I just also think is interesting that, like, the moderators didn't make the point of or anything. One of the worst hit areas is Asheville. Like, Aaron, we know it's hurricane season. We know hurricanes usually come up the coast. I mean, they do come up the coast. That's how they happen. Asheville, not on the coast.
In the mountains. Asheville in the mountains.
Decidedly not on the coast. And so this idea that it's like, that this is sort of hurricanes as usual is bullshit. And if you listen to the people, which I'm sure he hasn't, who are in Asheville, they're all like, I've lived here my whole life. This has never happened. There was 20 feet of water in my house, like in the mountains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think he got off the hook by just saying a really bland sentence that everybody can agree with. Yeah, like, it was bad and it's unspeakable amounts of human tragedy. Yep, okay, cool. But like—
Next.
His inability to offer literally any solutions at all. I like clean air and water. Cool, me too. How are we going to achieve that? JD, like, no solutions,
right.
no ideas. I do want to say Crooked Vote Save America Action and Crooked Ideas have set up a mm-hmm. fundraiser to support on the ground efforts, including World Central Kitchen, Organizing Resilience, AmeriCares Foundation, and more. You can just go to votesaveamerica.com/Helene, H-E-L-E-N-E, and you can make a donation to those groups who are getting aid to the people who really need it. That's votesaveamerica.com/H-E-L-E-N-E. And we'll put that in show notes, too, so everyone can do that. Okay, let's pivot to abortion.
Yeah.
Alyssa, I'm going to say the low point of the debate, in addition to that weird question about China. And
what on earth?
It's like, I mean, I don't like to complain about the moderators. I think they were trying to do something, but I don't know what it was that they were trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, is that the, anyway, that was a weird question. And the abortion question, them parroting obvious Republican disinformation,
yeah,
was egregious.
We texted the second it came out of their mouths.
Yeah. Walz was asked to respond to a false assertion from Trump that the Minnesota governor supports abortion in the 9th month. And in and rather than just being like, this is ridiculous, which he I would have been like, what on earth are you asking me this stupid question for? He brought up personal stories of women who faced health crises or died due to state abortion bans. And he pointed out that in Minnesota, they restored Roe v. Wade. Now, here's what I wish he would have said. People don't know that Roe v. Wade means up to the point of fetal viability,
right,
a person can have an abortion. Past the point of fetal viability, there are still reasons that a person can have an abortion, but they need to be serious medical issues. I wish he would have just specified that. Like, there's no world in which Minnesota allows somebody 8 months pregnant with an otherwise healthy fetus to terminate.
And no health problems.
Yeah, like, to terminate that pregnancy. And also, no doctor would do that. Can we?
Honestly.
No doctor.
It is an absurd argument they continue to be allowed to make.
Yeah. And also, you know, another thing that's bothering me a little bit is the discourse around Project 2025, the Heritage Foundation's Project 2025. Right now, the fact-checking line is that Project 2025 does not create a registry of pregnancies, but it fucking does.
It does.
Like, it literally does. It's in a, there is a, there's a book, there's a printout, there's a, there, it is a public, it, it's written. It literally does. What did you make of Vance trying to kind of pivot around his zealotry around abortion?
He's like, well, look, this is the dance they've been doing for months because they have a rabid base that is so anti-reproductive freedom that, but the rest of America is for reproductive freedom. So he's trying to have his cake and eat it too. He does not believe in reproductive freedom. He will have a federal registry that is monitoring pregnancies. And therefore, I mean, look, Aaron, how many stories have we read, reported out, thoroughly researched about women who were in hospitals that had miscarriages? And the police were called. Mm-hmm. Like, JD.
It literally happened in Ohio, in his home state of Ohio.
He doesn't care because what he believes is better than what is actually best for the health of half of Americans.
Yeah. He also made this point that is objectively insane and we should not let it pass. Like, he was like, listen, guys, you know, everyone can agree that it's best left to the state legislatures. What the fuck, man? What? You think that a person's healthcare decisions are best left to a body of elected officials who will vote on it, despite having not met all the people whose bodily autonomy they are voting on? That is so weird. That doesn't...
Here's the other issue. This is the other issue, and it is exemplified in so much of what's going on around the country. Legislators, you know, Trump says one thing, legislators hear him, they get together, they pass a law, the law gets overturned, but then the law that gets challenged. So what they have done and what he seems to think is okay is letting women live in a perpetual state of chaos where they have, Aaron, you have to be so glued to social media, to the news, to understand in so many states in this country what limbo your healthcare is in, that is what is so totally fucking disingenuous about his argument, because it can be every 2 years you could have a different outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
I mean, in Georgia, things changed overnight.
Right.
Overnight this week. And we'll get to that in a little bit. But, like, in Georgia, which previously had a 6-week ban, now suddenly they can get them up to 22 weeks. And I'm not complaining about that. Like, good for Georgia. But you're right about the whiplash.
But that's the thing. It's them changing it now. It will be challenged, right? We don't know when. We don't know how. It will be challenged. So if you are a pregnant person right now that you want to be pregnant, or if you are pregnant and you don't want to be pregnant right now, that helps you. Mm-hmm. If you're someone who's thinking about what you want your life to look like in 2 or 3 years, what do you base your safety on? Like, what do you base your rights on?
I also have to say, you were privy to this when it was going on, Alyssa, but during my last pregnancy, there was a period of several months where I was going in every week because they had seen what they thought was a catastrophic heart defect. And they had to go and monitor it, and, like, it, they couldn't figure out what was wrong. And there was a point where the doctor brought up the possibility of termination. And I was like, you know, it was post-viability. It was post, it was post, it was like 26 weeks when they found what they thought they found. She ended up being fine. Like, whatever issue was, she's totally fine. She's great. But that was something that when it was happening, I was like, I live in California, a state where if I needed to, for like humanitarian, like humane reasons, end a pregnancy that where the baby would be totally like non-viable or die right away. Like, imagine, I just was, I tried to kind of distance myself from the stress of the thought. But I tried to put myself in, like, what if I were in Texas, you know, like the added stress of not only being like the uncertainty of the health of my baby that I really very much wanted, it combined with like a bunch of people who've never met me, who don't know me, who don't know my situation, who don't have any attachment whatsoever to me or this baby that I'm carrying, like telling me that I have to like get on an airplane, take an air, like go through that, like, get in a hotel, like all of that shit is just, it is horrible. It's so fucking inhumane. And it is asinine from just a planning perspective. If you're just trying to be like
totally
bloodlessly like, okay, what's the best way for everyone to have like access to the healthcare that they need? Well, they could just go, what? No, every single state has a different set of rules. It's so stupid. Like it is unbelievably stupid. And I went off on a tangent, but it's not just like elective abortions are completely moral and fine and none of my fucking business. But a lot of abortions take place because of things that are completely devastating to women and to families. And it is so gross that J.D. Vance thinks it's appropriate that a state could decide via committee that that a woman shouldn't have access to freedom just because they don't feel like it, just because they don't feel like she should have access to that. Like, it is so, it's inhumane. It is unfeeling. It is stupid. It is objectively a stupid way to go about it. And he also said, I'm going to say Vance said that he had a friend that told him that she was going to have an abortion. And I'm just going to call bullshit on that. No, you didn't. So
who would ever tell him? He is like the world's biggest narc on this issue. No one told him. No one told him.
Absolutely not. No. I want to talk a little bit about family leave, which, you know, again, Vance did that thing where he was like, we need more, people need more options. And everyone's like, yay. But under the,
he was like voucher programming the paid family leave issue.
Exactly. The note behind the note is that what he really thinks is going to get people past over the hump of whether or not to have kids is whether or not they can send their kid to private school. That is like, that is
or
like
church daycare
or church daycare for free or on the state dime. I just want to point out that the Trump campaign's line is that Kamala Harris had 3.5 years to change the way the conditions in which families live in this country. I just want to point out that the Build Back Better plan, as it was originally written, contained generous, incredible, revolutionary changes. It contained grants to help pay child care providers, the Republicans and Manchin allowed to expire. It contained a universal paid family leave program. It contained universal, I think, pre-K or daycare.
Like, I think pre-K,
Pre-K. It was an incredible package for families. Did Vance vote for it?
No. And Aaron, he keeps saying things like, I think there's a bipartisan solution here because a lot of us care about the issue. Really? Because all you do is fucking talk about immigration. And there was a bipartisan solution about 6 months ago on that. And you all didn't support it, even though like an actual Republican sort of helped write it. So don't fucking peddle that bullshit either.
I mean, this is what the GOP loves to do. They love to scream and throw a fit and demand a compromise. And Democrats are like, okay, we'll compromise with you. Like, the ACA was originally written by the Heritage Foundation, if you can believe it or not. I mean, not the original, not the actual ACA, but the inspiration for it.
Right.
Was written by the Heritage Foundation. Because universal health care was just completely abhorrent to proponents of private industry and profiteering on health care. So Democrats were like, okay, cool. Yeah, sure. Yeah, we'll do something like that so everyone can get insurance. And now they're acting like they're screaming bloody murder that the ACA exists and they think that it's a bad idea.
Right. You know what my favorite part was on that exchange? When Vance got so antsy and he's like, Donald Trump saved the Affordable Care Act.
Oh, my
Actually,
God.
My boy, John McCain saved John the Affordable
McCain
Care Act.
Saved the Affordable Care Act. Nancy Pelosi birthed that thing.
She Correct.
Was, she was sleeves rolled up, like, pulling that thing out. Like, and John McCain saved that. Yes, absolutely.
So get out of here. Like that, I audibly, I was alone in the living room. I just like laughed out loud at that
one. It was such a falsehood, such a blatant falsehood. I think that that also exposes a weakness of the format of a debate because the role of the vice president, the job of the vice president is not to win debates. The job of the vice president is to actually serve as the backup president in case something happens.
God forbid.
But also an important role of the vice president is to be a messenger and to communicate important like priorities of the American people to help craft legislation and policy.
Yeah.
And this isn't necessarily a good way to learn what they're going to do because it reminded me a little bit of like the Brett Kavanaugh or the Amy Coney Barrett confirmation hearings. Like there is no consequence for just going up there and lying your face off.
Right.
And saying
not at all.
And saying whatever you need to say to get through to the next stage. Because there's not going to be like the truth police aren't going to show up and be like, well, JD, you actually said you wanted to make it easier for people to have kids.
That was one funny part of the debate when I think it was Margaret Brennan was like, actually, JD, the Haitian migrants in Ohio are legal. And he's like, I didn't think there'd be fact checking.
I know. That was like another mask off moment for him. He is a twerpy little narc. And he's like, you're breaking the rules.
And it was like, oh, my God, that's your state. Did you hear what you just said?
Yeah.
He did, though. He did hear what he said.
Yeah. It was really I think that the debates without fact checking are kind of useless.
Totally. And look, like last night, it was whatever time my time was, like 10:30. And they're like, we'll be back. And I was like, oh, my God, this is going on. But I do think years and years ago, they used to break the debates up by topic. You know, like there would be a foreign policy debate. There would be a domestic policy debate. I do think like last night, that was the thing that was a little frustrating. Just when they were like getting into like real differences, they were like, well, we need to get on to the next topic because we have so much to cover. And it's like, I don't know, maybe you need to cover less. Like, do a climate change. Honestly, the world right now would benefit from a climate change debate.
Mm-hmm. 100%. But I don't know that a Republican agree to do that. I mean, just for the same reasons I wouldn't agree to a unicorns debate. Like, they don't think it's real. But then again, you know, it would be like if I were currently being stabbed by a unicorn and refuse to participate in a unicorns debate because I'm like, it's not real. I'm not getting stabbed.
Get out of here. Fuck this.
So I think that's pretty much all I wanted to. Oh, do you want to talk about anything else about the debate or do we want to move on?
No, I feel like, you know, we covered what needed to be covered.
I also think, let me just say this. I think that the pundit take is that Vance won because he was more pundity. I think that whether it, I don't think that any damage was done by either side.
None whatsoever. Then I don't think the needle was moved at all. I still think that people maybe come out and they're like, oh, J.D. Vance can speak faster than I thought, you know? But I think that Tim Walz, like the thing that I always think comes through is authenticity. I think it is so incredibly rare you ever see it in a debate because people are prepped to fuck and then they just spit out lines. And the thing that I did appreciate is like you straight up saw Tim Walz thinking. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You could literally, he was taking notes and he was responding in kind. And I just, I was like real proud of him. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, especially because like that day, all the cable networks were playing like the interviews of people who had moderated his debates before and basically said how much he sucked. And so I was like, I thought he fucking killed it. He did great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought he did a good job. And I also want to point out that even if it had been like a really decisive victory or embarrassment, Donald Trump cannot stand to not be the center of attention for even a moment, even if it serves him well. So I'm sure he's going to be yapping, doing wild shit, standing in a photo op.
He already is.
Behind a, oh, good. Can't wait until we're done with this so I can see what yaps he has yapped. You know, God, a month out. We're a month out.
A month out.
I also want to say, you know, speaking of Donald Trump yapping, haven't really heard him talk about the IVF thing since he just promised that he was going to cover IVF 100%.
He's like, I'm on it. I got it. And then he's just like, I hope this never comes up again. Except, you know what? Gavin Newsom won't let him get away with that.
Yeah, Gavin Newsom signed a bill over the weekend that would require insurance companies to cover IVF treatments for Californians. Mm. So the bill expands IVF inclusion for LGBTQ plus families by changing the definition of infertility for insurance purposes to be a person's inability to reproduce either as an individual or with their partner without medical intervention.
Mm-hmm. Do you know what I think is so funny about this?
What?
Okay. So if you are New York State, if you're a blue state, you're like, you know what? This is the right thing to do. We're going to try and figure it out. Even if we can't cover it all the way, like, we're going to try and figure it out. So, like, what do you think this does to, like, if you're deciding whether to live in a red state or a blue state, I just think it's really funny that this could, like, displace populations across the country from people who are like, you know what, it just seems safer and, like, better for me over there.
Yeah, well, good luck finding an apartment because it's expensive.
It's like...
My first apartment when I moved to L.A. in 2018, I just, like, was just out of curiosity, looked at my old building, double the price now, double what I was paying.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it is really not. It's not affordable, guys. It's not affordable to live here. You might find some deals in the Inland Empire, though. Okay. let's talk before we take a quick break about the Georgia abortion ruling. Alyssa, you want to take it away?
Yeah. So, Aaron, a little bit of good news. We talked about it earlier. On Monday, a Georgia judge struck down the state's 6-week abortion ban that had gone into effect directly after Roe was overturned. So, as we said, this is a temporary win because the issue is likely going to go on to the state Supreme Court. But for now, a win nonetheless. The case was decided by Judge Robert C.I. McBurney of Fulton County Superior Court. And Aaron, should we just do two quick dramatic readings of the decision?
Sure. Can we just say that McBurney is a great last name for somebody who
perfect.
He has so many McBurns in this decision. Oh, but
it is. Okay. So I think, so here's my favorite. My favorite is a review of our higher court's interpretations of liberty demonstrates that liberty in Georgia includes in its meaning, in its protections, and in its bundle of rights, the power of a woman to control her own body, to decide what happens to it and in it, and to reject state interference with her healthcare choices. That power is not, however, unlimited. When a fetus growing inside a woman reaches viability, when society can assume care and responsibility for that separate life, then and only then may society intervene.
Love that. Love that's a McBurney.
Love that.
And that's
love
that. That's McBurney. And he also had some choice words for originalism, which is a very stupid way to interpret laws. But anyway, he said, the meaning of the Constitution is no more fixed than the composition of the majority in the highest courts in the land, especially when formerly bedrock principles such as stare decisis appear to be on the wane. Given that less majestic but undeniable reality, the more logical approach to assessing whether a legislative enactment is void at the time of its passage is to rely on the then controlling constitutional interpretation. Otherwise, ghost laws from years or decades past, enacted by legislators long since voted out of office, can spring to life when our ever-changing politics yields a new majority on our high courts, a majority which in turn imparts a new meaning to supposedly unchanged and unchanging constitution. But here we are.
But here we are.
Take that, Sam Alito. I also
McBurned.
McBurned. I also want to point out that McBurney is a Republican appointee.
Yep. Yes. Very important.
I was like, I got to the end of the ruling and I was like, Robert McBurney. And then I Googled it and I was like, he's white. And then I kept reading and I was like, and appointed by a Republican. That is wild. Well, Mr. McBurney, Judge McBurney, you are welcome on Hysteria. You can be
anytime.
Anytime. You could be a guest then.
You can just come read your opinions. We'll listen.
That'd be fine. That's a McBurney, we'll call it. All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we've got some interviews with some down ballot candidates you're going to want to meet. And then we've got Sanity Corner / I Feel Petty.
The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome back to the final leg of Hysteria's Get In Losers, We're Running for Office tour. All summer, we have road tripped across the country to meet some of our favorite ladies running for office in 2024. And we're doing a last hurrah with five incredible candidates. They're grinding nonstop to protect their states and make America a little bit more blue. So buckle up and get ready to vote. And also maybe donate or volunteer. We need these candidates behind the wheel. We are kicking off the road trip with a stop in the Grand Canyon State with Stephanie Simicek, who is running for the Legislative District 2 State House seat. The Arizona State House is currently Republican-controlled. If Democrats flip two seats in each chamber, they will control the legislature for the first time in over three decades. And so we need to get Stephanie in that seat. Stephanie, you have a background in education and even served on the Deer Valley School Board. What about your background in education prompts you to run this cycle?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. As a parent and a public school teacher, I taught first grade and was a regular substitute teacher for Deer Valley and a current school board member. I really have seen firsthand how a lack of funding has been detrimental to our state. As a teacher, I would use my own money so that I could create a wonderful and, you know, interactive experience for my students. And we all know that's just not possible to keep up with. When our educators, and when I say educators, I want to make sure I'm clear that I'm talking about teachers and paras and bus drivers and office staff and our cafeteria workers, because we all work together for the success of our students. And we, when they are not making a livable wage, along with the increase of housing that we're seeing here, you know, mortgages are no longer affordable. People cannot afford their rent. You know, they are not able to be successful. We have to do better. Arizona now ranks 51st in the country for funding. This includes teacher salaries. It includes per pupil spending. And we really just have to do better. And my background in running, you know, to flip this legislature from its one seat majority that really just continues to defund public education and refuses to hear any bills that would support everyday Arizonans' basic needs, to a majority that will put Arizona first, that includes our children, and no matter what zip code they live in. That's really important to me.
So the other week, let's talk a little bit about school funding. The other week, Alyssa and I talked about some of the insanity around the deficit vouchers have created in Arizona. When the state has spent too much money on vouchers, what programs do they take money from to make up for the shortfall?
Sure. Well, the Universal ESA voucher program is currently funded out of the general state fund. So that's a big reason why our state has gone from what we had a surplus to a deficit over the last several years. And in order to balance the budget from pulling that money out for vouchers, we've had to take money from public safety and our roads. $300 million came out the budget this year for water infrastructure and conservation. The state's also taken money from our opioid settlement funds that was supposed to go towards helping people with opioid addiction to help balance the state budget now. And so rather than investing in public education, which 90% of Arizona families choose, we're bleeding money out of our general fund to pay for these types of programs that, I want to add, do not require any accountability and transparency. So what I mean by that is where our public schools have to account for every penny that is spent and show growth through state testing, which is how it should be, right? We're using taxpayer dollars for this. But those that are receiving voucher money are turning it over to private schools who do not have to provide this type of accountability and transparency. So they're spending it on things in addition to the private schools where we see this happening. We also see that parents are spending it when their child is homeschooled, are spending it on things that are claimed to be educational. And this is a big stretch. So for example, purchasing an espresso machine so that your child can, you know, learn to be a barista, or purchasing. It's true. It's very true. There's a current case going on for purchasing ATVs for outdoor recreation as part of a student's curriculum. And the state, you know, kind of finally started to step in a little bit, but this particular person is pushing back very hard to say that they can use voucher money for that. And obviously, they don't have to account for anything. And when this money is going directly to the private schools who don't have to have the same requirements for state testing and don't have to fingerprint for the safety of their staff to let, you know, parents know that their child who will be interacting with an adult is not, that has not had a formal background check. It's really concerning. And so we call this welfare for the wealthy, because the majority of people who use voucher money were actually planning on sending their child or children to private schools anyway. So at minimum, the accountability and the transparency should be a requirement, I believe, for receiving vouchers from our taxpayer dollars. And I just want to add, the importance of all of this is that a well-educated workforce, it does everything for Arizona. It attracts new business. So our strong public education system is not just an education issue. It's an economic issue for our communities and our state as well.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about your opponent and why it's so important, given your opponent, that you are elected in November.
Sure. I'm running to flip the legislature from its one-seat majority that continues to not support everyday Arizonans. So I'm the only candidate who supports properly funding public education, holding those that receive voucher money from taxpayer dollars accountable for spending, supporting reproductive health care for all women. I strongly believe that the government has no business in the exam room with a woman and her doctor to make healthcare decisions. For me, holding and winning this seat, and for others around the state, we're working so hard. It means that we'll be able to put Arizona, all Arizonans, first. And that means investing in water conservation and infrastructure for our future generations. We must also find solutions for our affordable housing crisis and continue to invest in public safety. So that's really, truly why it is important that I am elected in November. We've got to flip the legislature this year.
Yeah, we also need more teachers in public service, I think.
Yes, we do.
They know what's going on in a way that a lot of people who are elected officials do not. Stephanie, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. Listeners,
please check out simicheckforaz.com. That's SimacheckForAz.com to see how you can help. And don't forget votesaveamerica.com/vote to make sure you're registered. Now let's drive 800 miles up north to Colorado, where Congresswoman and Dr. Yadira Caraballo is running for re-election in Colorado's most competitive district. Last election, she won by a razor-thin margin, so it's vital that we put the pedal to the metal and keep her in office. Congresswoman, welcome to Hysteria.
Hello, thank you for having me today.
Your list of accomplishments is intimidating at first. You're the first Latina elected to Congress in Colorado. You're a pediatrician and you're an extremely effective legislator.
Oh, well, thank you. Yes, it's I decided from a young age that I wanted to be a doctor. Never really thought that that would parlay into politics.
You're like, you know, when like a kid is like, I want to be a princess doctor, veterinarian, astronaut. You actually got to do all of it. Okay, so you won your seat by only 1% in 2022. How's your race shaping up this cycle?
You know, it's going to be tough again. It was designed to be a toss-up seat. This is the first time that Colorado used an independent redistricting commission, and they decided to put all of the competitiveness in the state into this one seat. So we expect it to be close again.
So as I mentioned, you're a pediatrician. What prompted you to first run for office?
You know, I think when you go into medicine, you think that you're going to fix things for families and for patients. Once you go into private practice, you quickly realize that there's lots of things that you can't fix as a doctor. And so it was frustrating trying to take care of kids and having to deal with issues around homelessness and poorly funded schools and having to talk to families about the cost of healthcare and whether they could access it and not just whether they could follow the treatment plans that I had come up with. And so that led me to run for the state house to see if, you know, outside of clinic, I would be able to fix a lot of those social determinants of health.
Mm-hmm. And you were first elected in 2018 and had some incredible legislative successes. Can you tell us about a few?
You know, Colorado, we had just achieved a trifecta government. So we had the governor's office, the Senate, and the House. And so we were able to do catch up on a lot of different kinds of policies to help families that we had been waiting on for a long time. So, you know, I was able to look at the way that ballots are sent out in Colorado. And we have an incredible election system here, but ballots weren't being translated into other languages in any major county outside of Denver. So I was able to fix that. We increased the amount of money that we were putting into primary care. We expanded kindergarten and preschool for kids by instituting a new nicotine tax. We put paid family leave on the ballot so that people could have that and paid sick days, which we also passed at the same time. So just a whole slew of policies to help the families like the ones that I had been seeing in clinic.
Dr. Caraballo, I saw on Colorado 9 News that you have your first debate against Gabe Evans on October 8th. So listeners, let's make sure we show our support and check out ways to help. Head over to Caraballo for Congress, C-A-R-A-V-E-O for Congress.com. And while you're online, make sure you're registered and know what's on the ballot in your community by heading over to votesaveamerica.com. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
We are headed to the Buckeye State to talk to Representative Amelia Sykes of Ohio, where she currently serves the state's 13th congressional district. This year, she's up for re-election to keep her House seat. Republicans have identified her as a top target to defeat in a toss-up race, but she is keeping her eyes on the prize. Amelia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So glad to be here.
Okay, so I am not intimidated by many people, but growing up, you were a competitive gymnast and a ballet dancer, and anybody who's ever done either of those things knows that they are not to be trifled with. Now you're only 38. You were already House Minority Leader over in Ohio, and we want to make sure you're back in Congress. How have you fit all of that into a short life?
I stay busy. I think I may have an extra 15 hours in the day because truly I don't understand how sometimes it works. But, you know, The desire to serve my community has always filled me, and we make time for what's important. And so I've worked really hard with my community in a place that I have such deep respect for and appreciation for raising me and helping me become the person I am today. And so I owe it to them to spend the time to focus on making our community better. And so we just figured it all out. And every once in a while, you find me on a trampoline or a balance beam and having a little fun along the way.
Amelia, during your time as House Minority Leader, what did you learn about leadership during this particularly volatile political time? And how did you work across the aisle?
I found that one of the ways that I could connect with my colleagues on both sides of the aisles was just to find their humanity. And oftentimes people didn't expect me to do so, especially as a Democrat in a Republican supermajority. But when I would just find something that connected us and say, hey, I heard that you're interested in basketball. Let me tell you about my community. LeBron James was born there. Steph Curry was born there. And next thing you know, we're starting a conversation. And then, oh, yeah, by the way, let's talk about this tax bill. Just throw that in there, by the way. And so finding those ways to connect with people and taking appreciation for who they are really has served me well. And I've been able to work with people from some of the most opposite backgrounds that I have and put forth really meaningful legislation that helped reduce costs for families, that made our community safer, that allowed for us to address our infant and maternal health issues. And so the same type of spirit from my time as the minority leader I brought with me to Congress, and it's how I've been able to be such an effective bipartisan legislator here and really hope to continue the work that I have been doing, because I've learned a lot of good lessons, and every time I learn something new, I can't wait to implement them all over again.
So I was reading in the Columbus Dispatch that Republicans say you are too extreme for Ohio. What is it that you believe they find so objectionable and extreme?
I think this is just their national message. When you ask them and you say deep down, what is it, to your point, what is it that is so extreme, they can't answer it. Or they're talking about a policy that I did not put forth or some national hit against Democrats. But if you come to the district, and I welcome anyone to come visit us, you will find that people will say that I helped them with their Social Security. We were able to get them a passport so they could take a family vacation finally for the first time in several years. Or that we were helpful to connect loved ones who are navigating immigration issues. There is nothing extreme about putting constituents first, and that is what my community knows the best about me. And so while we may hear these attacks, because that's what people do, unfortunately, this time of the year, we know that the work that we've done at home, the work that I've been doing connecting people to Congress, to their federal representation, is really effective. And so it's just background noise and just things to distract from the fact that we've been really, really effective and have a track record to prove it.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about your constituents with a lot of warmth and love. Why should somebody come and visit your district? What are your favorite things and what would you show people?
Well, first of all, we're the birthplace of champions. So we refer a lot of sports references. I was a former gymnast, a state champion, a national finalist in vault. That was my best area. But like I said, LeBron James and Steph Curry were both born in the same hospital. It was a good way for me to introduce the district and just talk about exciting things. We also are the birthplace of the NFL, and the National Football Hall of Fame is in the district. And again, it's just a really easy way to connect people. But in between all that great sports reference, we have the Cauga Valley National Park, which is an urban national park, one of the only, if not the only, in the country. We have incredible restaurants, a lot of spirit, and just good old Midwestern values. And so we have a little bit of everything, whatever you like. And of course, that Midwestern hospitality that we are so known and loved for, that people can come enjoy. So please come visit us. We'd love to see you.
Oh, my gosh. You've sold me. Also, Vault, that is the scariest one, to be honest. You are familiar with running very fast and hard at something that doesn't seem like it should be there. Listeners, head over to AmeliaSykesForCongress.com to see how you can help keep Amelia in Ohio's 13th. Thanks, Amelia.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure.
Now let's drive up to Michigan's Downriver District to check in with Representative Jamie Churches, who is fighting to protect her seat in the Michigan State House. We want to keep her in the seat so she can keep up the good work on issues like gun reform, healthcare, and minimum wage. Jamie, welcome to Hysteria. Okay, so you're running to keep your seat. as a state rep in Michigan 27. So, listeners, here are the stakes. Michigan's state House of Representatives holds a Democratic majority by only 2 seats. Jamie, explain what's at risk if Dems don't hold even a slim majority.
So everything that we've done is at risk. When I got in, we did required background checks for firearms, ERPO legislation. We did the Clean Energy and Jobs Act. We protected abortion care for people in our state. And we've done so many other things. And all of those things are at risk of being undone. And more onto that, more conservative priorities will try and stop any of the progress that we've made and push their progress forward. This is the first time in almost 4 decades that we've had a Democratic trifecta. And because of the work that we've done in our legislature, we can push these priorities all the way to the governor's desk. And this will create almost like a stalemate where we won't be able to do more. We will kind of be stuck.
Mm-hmm. You're a teacher. We love teachers on Hysteria. Your students actually inadvertently inspired you to run. Can you tell us that story?
Yes. So it was around the holidays, and we had my classroom was a mess. We did cookie decorating, and there's always this lag time after you have a celebratory party. The parents had left, and there was a bunch of paper plates and on my desk, and I had given them a writing assignment okay, what are 3 wishes that you have that you would want to do when you grew up? Because I need to do something academic for those little pieces of time that I had left. And I was reading those stories at my desk after all the kids had gone home to their winter vacation. And I had these cookie paper plates on my desk, and I was I should do this. What am I going to do this for the rest of my life? Or what more do I want for my life? Or do I want to be an elementary school teacher my whole life? Which I love that job. But I wrote down my 3 dreams, and being a state rep was one of them. And it was one of them that scared me the most. So,
oh my gosh, that sounds like the inciting incident of an inspiring movie. Democrats have had complete control in Lansing, which can be a double-edged sword. What issues are your constituents talking about most? And what are you doing to address their problems?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think in my district, it's a little hard to say what is it most, because my district is it has vibrant perspectives, both Democrat and Republican perspectives. So a lot of more Democrat perspectives are protecting abortion care, expanding access to reproductive care for women in our state. I'm actually working on that personally as a priority to expand reproductive care for women who are pregnant, for women who are having a hard time becoming pregnant, and families developing in any way they want. And then we also have more conservative perspectives, which people are worried about immigration, more federal issues. So listening to them, why are you concerned about this? Where are you hearing these talking points from? And I think a lot of it is just about feeling heard and seeing that I'm a person, not a political figurehead for a party, that I'm a community member. So I think it's just they want to be able to pay for their families. They want to be able to have families, and they want to feel safe in their community.
Mm-hmm. Listeners, Jamie's race is critical. It's considered one of the 4 most competitive state rep races in 2024, and Governor Whitner, Big Gretch, is up for re-election in 2026. We have to make sure that Dems maintain control. Please check out jamiechurches.com and see how you can help keep Michigan blue. Thank you so much, Jamie.
Thank you for having me.
We are rounding out our trip with a visit to the Keystone State to chat with Congresswoman Susan Wilde. Wilde is up for re-election in her district, which she won by only 4,713 votes and a 2% margin last election. Let's hear about the fantastic work Susan is doing. Congresswoman, welcome to Hysteria. First, let me say, as someone who loves a garden, reading about your victory garden gave me FOMO.
Yeah.
What's your best crop this year?
Tomatoes. All
really?
Kinds of tomatoes. Oh, yeah. Great, great tomatoes.
Oh, my gosh. I can't stop killing my tomato plant, so I'm going to need to take tips from you off this interview. As a member of Congress, you've said getting things done and working across the aisle takes hard work, and you prioritize listening to your constituents. What are the issues most concerning to your constituents, and why is it so important we make sure you're reelected to Congress?
The things that are common to my or that are most concern to my constituents actually pretty much the same across the board. I have a very diverse district. A lot of people don't know that. By that, I mean ethnically diverse with many ethnic minorities, but they're substantial. None of them are close to a majority. I will tell you, across the board, all of these constituencies have the same kinds of concerns. And it's generally their economic freedom, their jobs, good jobs, good paying jobs, making sure that the schools are of good quality in our district. Not all, they all try to be good quality, let me say. And in general, healthcare is a huge concern for folks, mental health care included in that. So I would say it's the same kind of kitchen table issues that Americans everywhere are talking about.
Mm-hmm. And you're the original author of the Access to Family Building Act, which would codify the right to IVF, but has been impossible to pass in the GOP-controlled House. What are your hopes for the future of that bill?
Well, that bill, the Access to Family Building Act, the companion bill is in the Senate with Tammy Duckworth as the lead on it, and it simply codifies the right to have IVF. It creates a federal right to in vitro fertilization. We have a lot of Democratic co-sponsors, almost all of them. We've got 4 Republican co-sponsors, and it is currently the subject of a discharge petition, but we need to get to 218 on that in order to force a vote, and it's not there yet. I don't think it's going to see a vote this Congress, but I do believe that that bill is going to be part of the Democratic majority's very, very top priorities, which will include the Women's Health Protection Act. And I think this will probably be a portion of that with a number of tweaks to it that will make it even better.
Mm-hmm. And when you're reelected, because we're not playing with ifs here, when you're reelected,
I only say when.
what will your top legislative priorities be for your next term?
Thanks for asking me that, because I have to tell you, I'm really excited to, all the things that I've been working on will continue to be priorities, making sure that we are continuing to drive down prescription drug prices and getting that Medicare negotiation piece solidified so that we're doing more drugs and that kind of thing. But I'm really excited to start working on childcare. I think we have neglected this issue in this country way too long. People are really struggling. We aren't giving our children the kind of advantage that they could have with universal preschool, which we absolutely need to incorporate. And we need to make sure that our childcare workers, early childhood education workers, are being fairly paid. We are literally entrusting them with our greatest resource, our greatest asset, our children, and yet we pay them terribly. And so there is a bill called the Child Care for Working Families Act that is bicameral, and which I really am hoping we can get moving on so that we can get some really good results for our children, for our working families, frankly, for our economy, because it would benefit employers as well if more people had this kind of benefit. And let me just say, childcare next to student loan debt and housing expense is the third largest, or not even the third, it's in the top 3 expenses for Americans. So it's really, when you start talking about birth rates and stuff, which matters, our birth rate is on the decline. No wonder. People are wondering how the hell they're going to afford childcare if they have student loans or if they want to buy a house. So we've got to get this done. And it's just long, long overdue.
Mm-hmm. I mean, as a mother of 2 who are under 3, got to say, I agree with you.
Mine are now 28 and 31, but I can still remember those days vividly. And boy, were they challenging and stressful.
Yeah, yeah. Well, oh my goodness. Susan, we really hope that you get reelected. We can't wait to see what you're going to do in your next term. Listeners, Susan won her seat by only 4,700 votes in 2022. So please head over to wildforcongress.com to see how you can help make sure she wins. Susan, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The holidays are expensive. You're paying for gifts, travel, decorations, food, and before you know it, you've blown way past what you were planning to spend. Don't start the new year off with bad money vibes. Download Rocket Money to stay on top of your finances. The app pulls your income, expenses, and upcoming charges into one place, so you can get the clearest picture of your money. It shows how much to set aside for bills and how much is safe to spend for the month, so you can spend with confidence. No guesswork needed. Get alerts before bills hit, track budgets, and see every subscription you're paying for. Rocket Money also finds extra ways to save you money by canceling subscriptions you're not using and negotiating lower bills for you. On average, Rocket Money users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Start the year off right by taking control of your finances. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel. 5 years ago, I was paying $65 a month for my subscriptions. Today, those same subscriptions cost $111, and I don't even use half of them anymore. That's why now I use Rocket Money to manage my subscriptions for me. The app gives you a list of all of your subscriptions and reminds you of upcoming payments, so you're not hit with any surprise charges. On top of that, it also sends you alerts when subscription prices go up, so you always know the price you're paying. If you decide you no longer want a subscription, you can cancel it right from the app. No customer service needed. And the best part is, Rocket Money even reaches out and tries to get you refunded for some of the money you lost. On average, people that cancel their subscriptions with Rocket Money save $378 a year. And overall, Rocket Money has saved its members $880 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You're listening to Hysteria, the podcast that would very much like to put their hat in the ring to replace Hoda on the Today Show, although I can't drink wine that early in the morning.
We'd kill it.
I know, but not
We'd
the...
We'd kill it. It could be white grape juice.
I would drink lemonade. I would have a morning...
See?
It's so refreshing. I would have a morning lemonade or a hot cocoa, depending on the season. Okay. before we get to Sandy Petty, some announcements for the class. Alyssa, remember the good old Obama days? Back when Trump was just a guy on reality TV and Twitter wasn't Elon Musk's personal safe space?
You mean like when Obama wearing a tan suit compelled cable networks to issue breaking news alerts?
News was indeed broken at that moment.
Well, if you want to take a walk down memory lane with me and Jon Favreau and Caroline Reston, you can join us on the newest episode of Inside 2024. We talk about the role that the campaign rallies play in elections, even before they became the number one place to hear weird Hannibal Lecter takes.
To get access to exclusive subscriber series and more, head to crooked.com/friends now. Also, we have new merch. New merch.
Love it.
We were both very involved in designing this stuff, although our design team are... Beautiful geniuses. So we had input, but really they ran three of the four bases with it.
Yeah.
There are some amazing onesies. We got some baby gear, like sexism makes me
finally.
Sexism makes me puke. one that says birth control, just simply birth control. And of course, there are a ton of tees, stickers, hats, and more for anyone who doesn't have a baby or who does. We contain multitudes. Alyssa, what are you into?
I love my hysteria hat.
I love that, like, 80s
Yeah, I love the hysteria
hat. Super cute. We've also got a bodily autonomy shirt that looks like the Girl Talk branding, like the board game. It's all super cute, and I love it all. I've gotten compliments every time I've worn a piece of it out.
Yeah, of course.
Show some love for hysteria and some rage for assholes who want to control our bodies all at the same time. Head to crooked.com/store right now to shop. Now let's get to Sandy Petty. Alyssa, you go first.
Erin, I have some breaking news for you.
Okay.
Do you know that rats in New York City are getting birth control for free?
Are women? Are human women?
No. But the rats are. This is, so Erin, breaking news. Breaking news here in New York City this week, where we all know the rats are a problem. But instead of baiting traps with murder sauce, they're baiting traps with birth control. And it's free. It's free. They don't need a prescription. They don't have to go to their provider. Rats are getting birth control for free. I want to thank the person who pointed it out was a friend of Hysteria, Dr. Heather Irrabunda. But then I went down my own rabbit hole to find out how it was being implemented. And I'll say this, Erin, I think you and I both know, as people who've lived in New York, I would rather the birth control. Like, nothing's worse than a live rat than a dead rat.
Yeah, oof. At least live rats sometimes have some character. Like, one time I was trying to catch the subway at J Street in Brooklyn, and there's always a place where I would wait for my train every morning because that was near the exit. You know how it is.
Of course, you know, you always have your spot.
Yeah, so I was walking to my spot, and I saw a rat standing, like, right near where my spot was. And as I got closer, the rat just, like, stood up and looked at me like, I'm waiting.
Hey bitch.
I'm waiting here. Are you going to get too close to me? And I was like, okay. And then it looked like I was waiting for a train, and it was so cute. Even though rats are responsible for some of the most...
A lot of disease.
A lot of human devastation.
Bad things.
But here's my question, Alyssa. Could rat birth control work on people? They do test a lot of pharmaceuticals on rats.
So, you know, I Googled this.
Okay.
And the jury is still out. I am waiting for a Reddit thread on this or something. But according to several New York outlets, it was not clear.
Okay. Okay. So I'm going to, I don't know if this is a sanity corner. I guess it doesn't make me feel good, but I really love justice. I really love when people get what's coming to them. And following the Diddy revelations and all of the unfolding of that story is really making me feel glad that we are living in an era where justice is coming for these people. The most recent article that I saw was that a lot of celebrities are very scared. I feel like there is going to be an entire generation of music, Hollywood famous people who now are going to be folded into this. And, like, frankly, if they're acting like abusive monsters, they fucking deserve it. And love to watch justice unfold. I feel like I'm in the final, like, 10 minutes of a Scorsese movie.
Yeah, it's all coming together.
You know, like, the perp walks are about to start. Like, it's like they're going to be working in their office and suddenly looking up from their desk and there's, like, three feds. And they know what's coming, you know?
And the guys with the FBI with the boxes behind them to take out all the criminal documents. It's like, it is, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. I'm glad, it's horrible that it happened, but I'm glad that it's over. And I hope everyone responsible is just taken to the woodshed, legally, so to speak. Okay, that is all the time we have for this week's episode of Hysteria. Listeners, we love you. We love hearing from you. If you want to reach out to us, hysteria@crooked.com. Let us know, you know, how your life is, any thoughts you have, any pitches
interesting.
You have.
What's happening in your state?
Yeah, what's going on with you? Tell us. We're curious. We get bored with our own lives, and we need stimulation from other people's stories. Alyssa, thank you for being my ride or die, as always. And thank you to all of the candidates who have spoken with us. Best of luck in all of your races. Listeners, again, thank you so much for being with us week after week. There will be more Hysteria for you next Thursday. Don't forget to follow us at Crooked Media on IG, Twitter, and TikTok. Subscribe to Hysteria on YouTube for access to video versions of your favorite segments and other exclusive content. And if you're as opinionated as we are, consider dropping us a nice review. Hysteria is a Crooked Media production. Caroline Reston is our senior producer. Our executive producer is me, Erin Ryan. And Alyssa Mastromonaco is our co-producer. Fiona Pestana is our associate producer. The show is engineered and edited by Jordan Cantor. We get audio support from Kyle Seglin and Charlotte Landis. Our video producers are Rachel Gajewski and Megan Patzel. And thank you to Julia Beach, Ewa Okolate, Adia Hill, and David Tolles for production support every week.
Hey, everyone. We have a show recommendation that you'll love. The High Life with Ricki Lake. Before finding bliss in her 50s, Ricki Lane had been through some serious challenges. From weight gain and hair loss to abuse and suicide, Ricki's life has seen its share of public hardships. But despite it all, she's managed to create a life filled with ease and a whole lot of just fun. Finally, in her midlife, she feels like she's mastered the art of choosing happiness, and she wants to share the hope, love, good health, and happiness with all of you. The High Life with Ricky Lake, which is all about finding your sweet spot. Are you ready for a joyful ride? Let's go.